you guys like free things? Because I absolutely love free things. Do you want to know what's for free? Downloading the Himalaya app. It is 100% for free. And it's awesome because they will curate a library of podcasts made especially just for you. How incredible and special does that feel? I love feeling special and I love free things. Download the Himalaya app to listen to my podcast, Fish Cheeks. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Fish Cheeks Quarantine Edition. Today I talked to my friend Luther Bob of Luther Bob's Fried Chicken. We talk about the first day of us meeting in high school, and we talk about how his business is doing now in the midst of this chaotic time. So please listen to this podcast because he also gives you guys a code for free fried chicken. Did I hear free fried chicken? Enjoy, guys, and stay safe. Hi, Luther.
Hi, Olivia.
You're not in the kitchen.
I'm not. I'm in my my small studio apartment.
Which I've been to. It's so cute.
Thanks.
Wait, did you move?
I did. I moved this past year to downtown before I was living in San Pedro for 5 years.
That's so crazy. I have no idea where San Pedro is.
The sister to Long Beach, you know, but Long Beach is kind of like the, you know, the upscale fancy sister, and San Pedro is kind of like the hair let down with tattoos type of sister.
Yeah, just like me and my sister. She's like Pasadena Equinox bougie, and I'm just like dirty backyard West Hollywood.
Oh, come on.
Wait, so you live in... You're in the same place that you cooked for us at, right? In downtown?
Yep.
Oh, that was amazing. Also, we just ordered...
Experience that.
So Sam and Cameron love Luther Bob's so much. We mentioned the name Luther Bob's. If you guys don't know what Luther Bob's is, it's Luther Bob's' fried chicken restaurant. We ordered it 2 days ago. Dude, you have no idea. Cameron was like... I just wish I could eat this every day. And Sam was like, we were watching MasterChef last night, and Sam was saying how Luther Bob's makes the best fried chicken. Like, you have no idea. This is just your name gets brought up every day.
No way.
Everyone loves your fried chicken.
That's hilarious.
I
do feel like Cam is like a really big fan. He seems like to be one of the biggest fans. And I'm trying to get this set up, but
it's okay. Take your time, Ian.
Lovely.
Oh wow, look at that! What did you actually use to prop the phone up?
I'm using my water cup and a coaster.
Ah.
Yeah.
The old coaster water cup trick. That's what I do too. Okay, so yeah, Cameron orders Luther Bob's probably like twice a week. His girlfriend also orders it. Everyone orders Luther Bob's. It's crazy. And, you know, we save the sauces as well.
Really?
Yeah, we have my favorite sauce is the spicy honey. That's my favorite sauce. Hot honey, yeah. But for those of you guys who don't, you know what we're talking about, this is my friend Luther. We grew up in Arcadia, California together. Apaches. We actually went to high school together. You're a year younger than me, right?
You're 2013 or 2011?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 1 year younger.
How did we meet? You recall this vividly, but I don't remember.
So we have a mutual friend named Allison, and I think, were you in cheer?
I was a cheerleader, yeah.
You were a cheerleader?
Oh my God, well.
Allison was captain of cheer, and she... was one of my best friends in high school. And she always kind of hung out with me and took care of me. She was older. So then she just wanted to introduce me to you. She was like, oh, I have this crazy fun friend and I think you'd get along with her really well. And I want to introduce you. And that's literally how we met. We met after school at the lunch yard. And then that same day we both went to, frozen yogurt back when that was like, you know, super trendy. That was super hot and trendy, right? It was like,
yeah,
hey, let's go get frozen yogurt. So then after I met you again, And so that was the first day.
At Frozen Yogurt.
That's correct. Yep.
That was like the high school hangout spot was Yogurtland.
It was. I used to collecting the spoons.
Oh my God, collecting the spoons. My mom still has Yogurtland spoons. No. I'm like, Mom, please throw them away. It's like 10 years old.
Oh my God.
Wait, so now Luther is a business owner, a chef. Are you a chef or a cook? I don't know what the difference is.
You know, I mean, the difference between a chef and a cook is, I would say a cook is someone who cooks at home primarily, you know, or they cook on the line. But for the most part, they will do everything that the chef asks them to do, right? So they kind of, they're more like followers, right?
And,
you know, they're like the sheep, and then the chef is like the herder, right? He like herds people. I wouldn't really consider myself a chef per se. You know,
you are. Oh my God, your background, your history, what you've done, you've created things. You've created menus for big companies.
I would say I've been in chef positions. Right now, I just might consider myself an entrepreneur.
At most. So, okay, we grew up in the most, like, the smallest bubble, Arcadia, I would say. So, growing up, it was all about, did you take SAT classes?
I didn't.
You didn't? Oh my gosh, I did.
I know.
I, like, faked it.
Really?
And you didn't? Wait, so how did you, your parents didn't pressure you to take SAT prep?
So they did. I was one of those weird logical kids that, you know, I was like, oh, Dad, you should save money and I'll buy a SAT prep book and I'll teach myself. And he was like, you sure? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. No worries. So, I mean,
Did you really mean it?
No. I also kind of reasoned with him. I was like, look, these SAT schools, like, they cost a lot. And I would say 70% of the kids just waste their time there. Like, they don't even get anything out of it.
It's true.
I'm going to be one of those people, Dad. And so,
wow. You
know, he was like, okay, just learn yourself.
Did you learn?
I didn't, but I did get a high enough score on the SAT that CIA, the Culinary Institute of America, the college that I went to and I applied to, they gave me a scholarship. So it's good.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. At first I thought you meant like CIA as in the CIA.
Yeah.
But you mean what does that stand for?
Culinary Institute of America. It's a premier culinary school, in the States.
Did you have to cook for them?
Before applying?
I don't know. How do you get into culinary school without like auditioning your food?
Yeah, so you in the past they required 6 month experience. So I spent 6 months working for free at AKA Bistro in Pasadena. It was at the you know, the Crayon Barrel Plaza.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was the flagship restaurant there. Beautiful restaurant. The chef there was also a CIA graduate from the same New York Hyde Park camp. So he took me in. That's where I first, you know, got a taste of the professional kitchen. It was super fun.
But wait, before you did that, why did you decide to apply to a culinary school?
You know, it's weird, man. It's like,
you were the only person in our high school that did that.
I know. I might be the first Arcadia person to go to CIA in New York, maybe. But it's interesting. I think I always position myself differently, right? I think there's an advantage when you do something that no one else is doing, right? Because then the competition is just a lot less. you know, I mean, I just couldn't compete. Like there's so many smart Asians out there. All my friends, you know, they're going to Berkeley, you know, like Harvard, Princeton, right? These incredible schools, USC, UCLA. And I was like, oh man, I'm looking at my GPA, you know, I look at my SAT scores and I'm just like, what am I going to do there? Like, how do I even get in? There's no way, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do something that I think I'm good at, right? I think I'm good at cooking. I watched a lot of cooking shows, grew up watching Food Network, Bobby Flay, Iron Chef, you know, and it was just, I've had a passion for it. And, you know, I talked to my dad and my mom, and I said, hey, this is something I'm really considering doing. And after spending 6 months in the professional kitchen working for free, they could tell that, like, I was really serious about it. And I said, I want to apply to the school. Do you support me? And they said, yeah, we'll support you. So, yeah.
And how long were you at CIA for?
I was there for a year. I signed up for the four-year program. But after doing my first year, you learn fundamentals, you learn some basic management. It's literally just, you're just like scratching the surface of what management is. It's just theory, right?
So it's not just cooking. It's like management, you know, too.
Yeah. Management.
Leading a group of people. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had English, we had history. We learned about, Antoine Carême and Escoffier and all of these, you know, like the lineage of French chefs, and if even someone like Gordon Ramsay, he traces back to, you know, mentors and mentors and mentors who've all come from like these great, chefs that we learn about in culinary school. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. But you only went for a year.
Yeah, I went for a year. After the first year, you do an externship, right? So the externship is six-month program. And you work in a professional kitchen. So I worked at a five-star restaurant in Georgia, at the coast of Georgia, called Sea Island Resort, the George Room at Sea Island. And so that was a super interesting experience. I was getting paid $9.25 an hour. I think this was 2013, I got free housing. I was getting paid $9.25 an hour, and I was working in a five-star kitchen. And so
that's,
I was like,
dream.
Hey, you know what? I don't want to go back to school anymore. And I had to convince my parents again to let me out of school.
Were they just like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah, they were very confused. They were like, what is this kid doing? Like, we don't know how to help him anymore.
But it seems like so it was this year that we reconnected and started, you know, hanging out and talking. But the years previous to this year, I remember just seeing all your updates on Facebook. You started your own food truck, Xiaokao Barbecue, right? That Instagram is incredible. The food is just beautiful, and you don't see that from a food truck. And you were also in China for a year, just like studying Chinese cuisine.
Yeah.
I was following your food journey from afar, and I was just like, wow, he is just doing his own thing. Like, it didn't seem like you cared what other people thought, that you didn't finish culinary school. It was just you on your own path, doing your own thing. It was so awesome to see that. And then what did you do after your career? I mean, not Korean barbecue, your Chinese barbecue.
Yeah. So after the food truck, by the way, thank you so much for, you know, keeping in touch. And even though, yeah, it's like we had a digital friendship almost.
Yeah.
We didn't see each other. We lived somewhere in the same city, but still so far away. But yeah, it's really incredible what, you know, how we can stay connected on social media and reconnect and you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, like high school was just yesterday.
I know.
Yeah.
But I remember after maybe like 7 years of just like not seeing you, this year you dropped off cookies for me, and they were the best damn cookies I've ever had in my life. Wow. And it was so, so delicious. And that's how we got reconnected again. And then you were filling me in on everything you want to do. And, you know, I didn't know you wanted to be a restaurant owner. I had no idea. I thought you were just like a chef at a really nice, like Michelin star restaurant. But the fact that you decided to become a business owner is really awesome. How did you decide that you wanted to own something rather than work for something?
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes from, you know, naive ambition, right? In culinary school, I was like, hey, you know what? I want to pay for my own culinary school. I want to go start a business. And after I start a business and it's up and running, it'll provide some cash flow, and I'm going to go back to culinary school, and it's going to pay my culinary school, right? Mm. I mean, this, you know, I was 20 years old when I was thinking of this, but I, nonetheless, I, you know, it's kind of like what David Chang says about, you know, jumping into the water and not saving anything for the swim back.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that's pretty much what I did with the food truck. And, you know, ultimately I closed the truck and we sold the truck and we just didn't see enough scalability in it. Right. Food was great. I think we were creating food that had a dialogue to it. But we didn't see it being, you know, it didn't have longevity. We sold the truck and I wanted to pursue something more scalable. Right. And, you know, while I was working my truck, my meals were often spent at the local Panda Express, right? Right off Slauson, there's this Panda Express. That's where our commissary was. And, you know, I would eat there and I would just think and I would read articles about Andrew Cheung and Peggy Cheung and their story. And I was like, man, this is a great business. Like, you know, employees are growing, customers are happy. They haven't gone public. Like, everything is incredible. It's a dream business to have.
And these are the owners of Panda Express.
That's correct. Yeah, they're the founders and owners. So, you know, when I was selling the truck, I actually had the opportunity to work for Panda Restaurant Group. So, yeah, it was an incredible experience. I was working as a corporate chef for the multi-concept team. It's just a dream come true job.
What is a multi... I don't know what you said. What is it?
A multi-concept team.
What is that?
Yeah, so it's this weird group. And by weird, I mean it's hard to define. It's essentially any concepts or restaurants or businesses that Panda Restaurant Group owns or has an investment in. But is not Panda Express, because Panda Express is just this monster. It's this beast that requires its own team. Mm-hmm. So everything else falls into a separate team, right? So mm-hmm. I was brought on by Gigi, who's the president of that team. And you know, I came on board to create recipes and help with operations and, you know, all of that type of stuff for any of the concepts.
That was your dream job. Did you feel like, oh, this is my big break right now? Or did you know that you were going to go further and do something else?
I mean, I thought it was, but somewhere in the back of my head, I also knew I wanted to have my own business, right? Mm. And, you know, I mean, it was a night and day difference. I went from working in the slums, literally like the food truck is... The commissaries are just in the ghettos, man. I don't know how else to explain it. It's, mm-hmm. It's not nice. You know, you don't have air conditioning. I'm driving this truck made in the 1980s. And every other time I drive it out, it breaks down on me, you know? And
oh my God.
It was extremely stressful. I went from that to wearing like, you know, like a suit and tie and clean chef whites, working in a corporate office, getting paid a lawyer job at the age of, you know, 24, 25, you know?
So wow.
It was an incredible experience, 100%. But still, even doing the job for a year, I had a lot of hesitation. I would say I had a lot of hesitation because I didn't see myself fulfilling my entrepreneurial calling. Yeah.
Interesting. So why fried chicken? It's very interesting that you took the route of fried chicken.
Yeah, I know. It's a big turn. You know, we're spending time at like, you know, Angler. Right before this, I was working at Angler.
Oh my God, I want to go there so bad.
Oh, you should. It's phenomenal. The banana pancakes with caviar. It's in this time, speaking back, it sounds absolutely ridiculous, but you know, when times are good, like, and there's, you know, good opportunities to have good food, like, their food is incredible.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm so hungry. And just craving, like, food. I can't wait to go to a restaurant and sit down.
I know, right?
And appreciate them giving me my check. I can't wait to, like, eat with forks and knives that are not my own. I'm just excited. But
okay, what's the first restaurant you're going to go to?
By the first restaurant, well, there's this Italian place called Il Piccolino that I love. They closed during this time. Sushi Gen in downtown. I'm so excited to go there. Wow. Angler. Hot Pot. Heidi Lau. Yeah. Oh my God. I can't wait to eat like spicy Chinese food. I'm so excited. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's where I'm going to eat all of that in a day.
I could feel your passion.
I love food. That's why, like, I think your job is so incredible, because it's you're just, it's like you're giving your heart and your soul to someone on a plate, you know. And especially the way you treat your fried chicken, it's something that I've never had before. And the fact that it travels so well, and then I get it and I take a bite into it and it's still so juicy and crispy, and the buns are still so soft. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it, but I want to know why you decided fried chicken.
Yeah. So going back to, like, you know, working a corporate chef job, getting really well paid, you know, I mean, it was a dream job, right? Working in the food truck industry, having that, you know, taste of what it's like to be an entrepreneur, but, you know, also doing really fine food, right? We were cooking everything over Binchiton. Binchiton is a Japanese white charcoal, super high quality, you know, type of, you know, charcoal to cook over. I think I realized what I really wanted, and what I really wanted was to take care of people, right? And I didn't want my passions and my ambitions for, you know, my, like, essentially what I would say is a dialogue in food to get into the way of operations and what would be a good business, right? And so it's very difficult relationship that, you know, at one part as a chef, I want to do these things. I want to cook this type of food. I want people to experience this type of thing. But on the other hand, I'm also the owner of a business, and I have to take care of my investors' money. You know, I have to make sure my employees are not stressed out, and they're able to execute the food. And, you know, there's job opportunity and there's growth for them within the company that the company is expanding. Right. So all of those things led me back to, which is, what do people want to eat, right? What is timeless? What is delicious and you know, has an opportunity for a slight twist, right? And all the roads led me back to fried chicken, right? Every ethnicity loves fried chicken. You know, Korean fried chicken, Chinese, lajiji, right? You know, KFC, it's international. Everyone loves fried chicken. And so I looked into this space and I said, okay, well, fried chicken is not big in the delivery market yet, right? And can it be bigger in the delivery market? I think so, 100%, right? And so, yeah, we ultimately came to the decision of doing fried chicken because it's a, you know, it's something that feeds the soul, right? It's not too expensive. It's not, you know, overpriced, or it's not, it's accessible. It's really accessible. And you know, that's what we wanted to do.
And it's interesting because, your fried chicken has Chinese twists in it, right? You use a lot of Chinese ingredients, and that's what makes it so special for Chinese Americans. Because for me, I'm like, oh my God, I know the sauce. It's familiar in my palate. Right. And my mom would eat it and she'd be like, I know it too. So it's awesome that, you know, you have that in your food. And at the same time, Sam kept mentioning, he was like, his logo is, you know, a Chinese man and his name is Luther Bob. It's such a, you know, Southern name. And Chinese man cooking fried chicken, which is so fucking awesome. And it tastes so delicious. And literally everyone that has it is just mind blown. But how is it like you said, you want, you know, growth for your staff, you know, you want to expand. How is it like right now in this current climate for all of that? Has it been challenging? I'm sure.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for your generous and kind words. I'm so glad that you do enjoy the chicken, even though it's, you know, like 20 or 30 minutes later. I'm glad it does deliver pretty well, and appreciate that. Right now, it is tough. We started really, really strong, right?
You started like a couple months before this pandemic happened.
Yeah, literally.
Worst time.
two weeks before it got serious.
Wow.
At least on our land, right? And so when March came, we effectively lost 60 to 70% of our sales.
Wow.
And during that time, I brought on my first employee, Molly. She worked at Ad Hoc. She was frying, you know, their famous buttermilk fried chicken for 2 years. You know, she worked there, wow, for 3 years. She spent time at French Laundry. So, you know, really respectable cook. And, you know, I brought her in part-time, you know, going into full-time by end of March, right? Clearly that plan had to change because, you know, halfway through March, we already burned through half of our bank account, you know, and we just had a lot less cushion. And I was like, okay, something needs to change. You know, so, you know, it's a difficult decision, but I had to speak with Molly and say, hey, right now, literally the best I can do is give you a day, you know, like a full day of work, because anything else, we're going to cannibalize ourselves, you know, and mm-hmm. there's no option. And she's okay with it. And she's all in to, you know, for the longevity of her position with the company. You know, so that was a very tough decision. We, you know, I decided to open every single day, every single hour,
yeah,
from 11 to 12 a.m.
So ambitious.
That was a big jump for me because I was working initially 8 hours in the kitchen, right? And I had a break from 1 o'clock to 4:30. We closed at 10:30. My schedule was like pretty reasonable. Mm-hmm. But I said, okay, I don't necessarily understand the algorithms. And this is a whole other discussion, like cloud kitchens and Uber Eats and DoorDash and their algorithms. But digital real estate is incredibly important. And I realized I needed to get better digital real estate. It's the difference between being on Third Street Promenade, you know, and the back alley of some, you know, neighborhood in Santa Monica, right?
And you're talking about the digital real estate on Postmates, on Grubhub,
exactly,
on DoorDash. So you want to be featured in, you know, the exactly premier list, and exactly you need to get to a certain, you know, quota of orders in order to get featured.
I believe so. I'm not sure if it's quota of orders. It probably is. That's probably part of the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
I think another part of it is, you know, I think they're not going to put people up on there that are open half days. You know,
yeah. So you decided to open every hour during this pandemic where people, I don't know if they trust delivery right now. So that must be so costly for you to...
It was. And at that time, my business partner, too, was he offered. He was like, hey, why don't you shut down the kitchen and spend your time creating digital media, you know, and create a brand, you know, uh-huh, that we can scale globally.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I said, it's not a bad idea. I would love to do that as well. But we have to be grounded. And realistically, we're spending $9,000 a month for this kitchen. And even if we're not operating that kitchen, that money is going out the door, right?
Yeah.
And how do we best, like, how, at this point, how do we best mitigate those expenses, right? Mm-hmm. And the only way to do it is let's push through our inventory. We're sitting on $2,000 of inventory, right? Things dramatically slowed down when we were picking up and we bulk order, we plan, okay, hey, the next week is going to be super busy. Completely different. It was so slow. We were sitting on this inventory. I said, okay, we have to move this inventory. Things are going to go bad, you know? And you and my partner, you know, was a little hesitant, and I was hesitant too. I said, hey, I'm going to develop some content while I'm in the kitchen. There's downtime, but let's give it a try, right? And I remember my girlfriend, she's saying, you know, I asked her, I said, hey, should we just close the shop right now? Because it's, I'm getting like 9 orders a day, literally 9 orders. It's like so slow. I'd get, you know, I'd have days where we do 140 orders in the month of March, right? $140 worth of orders. It's not, it's barely enough to pay the utilities.
So you went from 140 orders a day to 9 orders a day.
We went from about 55 to 9. Yeah. So it was a big drop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were just going to give up? I'm sure so many people are just like, what am I doing? You know, we're like living in this pandemic right now. And I remember the first week, everyone was going to Whole Foods, to Ralph's, just stocking up on everything so they plan to cook at home. Right. But then we realized, wait, Postmates is still going to be operating. And you and I were texting and I was like, wait, are you going to be open or are you going to close? So like navigating through this crisis as a new business owner, as a person who just proposed to his fiance, and like it must have been such a whirlwind of chaos, but you guys stuck through it and just decided to just keep it open.
Yeah So my fiance, I called her girlfriend earlier, huh?
It's okay. It's only been like 3 weeks.
Yeah. My fiance, at that time, she might have still been my girlfriend, but yeah, all of this happened so quick. She, you know, I asked her, I said, hey, should we close the shop down? And she said, what? No, like, you have to stay open. You have to be there. Like, you're a new company. You can't just close. Like,
yeah,
you got to stay open. And I was like, I know, but we're just bleeding money and I feel like I could do something better with my time, you know. But that her suggestion really hit, like really struck a chord with me. And that was a big part of the reason why I just said, hey, Ewan, let's just hold it out. Let's hold it out. Right. And literally we held it out for 3 weeks and things started picking up again. Right. Last week was the best sales in the history of our company. This week, we're already projected to do 30% more than last week.
So, wow.
Yeah, things are, you know, changing quickly. It goes down, but it's skyrocketing up now. And
that's so interesting. So how do you guys, I remember when I started ordering food again, I wasn't sure how to properly, you know, take the package from the delivery person and like, how do we ensure that, you know, the food is clean and not contaminated? Do you worry about that on your end?
Yeah, definitely. My biggest concern is not in the production of inside our kitchen, right? Because I'm the only one who works the kitchen and Molly as well. You know, and we regulate our, you know, our health. If we feel, you know, sick or if we are coughing or anything, we're just going to have the other person of the shift. But the point of concern is the driver, right? Because we don't necessarily see the driver. We're in a cloud kitchen where we, you know, we cook the order. You know, I write their name on the box and I say, thank you. I stamp their receipt on. I drop it outside the kitchen on a rack. And the cloud kitchen staff will come pick up the order. And then they're the ones who hand it off to the delivery drivers.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I would certainly say you know, we take precautions. For example, all of our food is packaged in a box, but we'll also double package it, right? So we have the tamper resistant, you know, plastic bags that, you know, you rip off and, you know, from the outside, you just kind of reach in. It's very, very clean. You know, you can wear gloves or sanitize the bag if you feel the need to. You know, most of our meals come in like this little barn box. And those are, you know, you can easily wipe the surfaces and then open it up and take your food out. But other than that, I think, you know, coronavirus tends to affect people more through the airborne, you know, manner.
So how has your, you know, as a new business owner, how has your perspective changed all of this? How do you see food now? And how do you see the food delivery business?
I saw the food delivery business as a luxury, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's more of a necessity, right? And I mean, I guess you can argue like, okay, it's really not necessary, but it's serving another purpose, which is safety, right? Before mm-hmm. it was, you never would get food delivered for safety reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now going to the grocery store, even, you know, the mayor of LA has recommended, do not go to the grocery stores if you do not need to, right?
Yeah.
Try to stay at home and limit as much exposure as possible, right? And right now, I think food delivery is serving that new purpose, and it did not have that type of demand before, right? And mm-hmm. I think also, you know, now that a lot of restaurants are not operating, people want restaurant quality food. And if they can't cook it at home, how are they going to get it, right? It's through Postmates or Uber Eats or DoorDash or Grubhub.
It's interesting seeing like the best, you know, the restaurants that are, you know, 5-star, Michelin, everything. They're now also hurting so bad. You think that these, it's almost seeing like, you know, celebrities who you feel like are untouchable being affected by this. It's like no matter where you are, who you are, you know, what your career is, everyone gets affected by this. And if you're saying that, you know, you dropped from like 55 orders to 9, I can't even imagine, you know, all these other chain restaurants, how are they surviving? It's so scary. And right now I've been ordering a lot from like Chinese restaurants just because I feel like they need the support.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And yeah, I just, do you know anyone in this food space that are just, you know, struggling and shutting down their restaurants?
Yeah. I have several friends who are in the industry, and you know, the fine dining industry is hurting. Anglers closed, and there's no, you know, these people that I was cooking with, they have absolutely no certainty for their future, right? They're furloughed, you know, okay.
Does the restaurant have an insurance for things like this?
Not for anyone besides the management, I would say. You know, maybe they can figure out some type of part-time position for the management to keep them supplied and keep them alive, you know, but everyone else, servers, you're talking about, you know, bussers, you're talking about dishwashers, cooks, line cooks, right now, they're just unemployed. They have no income. They have no option in the fine dining industry, in the industry where they have their most value, right? I mean, they can, you know, go work at a grocery store, and I'm sure they would rock and you know, do well and know all the problems. You know, it's tough because it's not something that people want to do, right? If you spend your whole life, you know, or years of your life training to be good at something, you want to do that. And right now they can't.
I mean, when do you see in the foreseeable future restaurants opening again?
I would hope it's within the next 4 months, but I think it could be a lot.
And what happens to, I don't know how this works, but do you guys order the produce and all of that in advance? Or do you guys order all these foods the day of? Because now I'm just thinking, what about, you know, the suppliers who are also supplying restaurants with food? How are they managing through this?
Right. So it's really unfortunate. I have several different suppliers. One of them supplies my paper goods, right? All my packaging. I spoke with him 2 weeks ago. You know, he was saying, hey, man, like, I feel like I might get laid off. I'm applying to Domino's. I'm applying to Pizza Hut. If you have a position for me, let me know. I'm willing to work, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, I would love to, but right now, I really don't even have a position for anyone, you know? And true to his word, he did get laid off, right? All of these distributors, they're cutting down. I spoke to my distributor at Sysco today. literally just 2 hours ago. And he said, hey, Luther, man, there's a possibility I might get let go of, you know, furloughed, and I won't be able to help manage your accounts. You know, and it's tough. I mean, all these distributors, their sales are down 50% or more. You know, it's devastating to say the least.
I think what makes me stay up all night thinking about is just people in the service industry, you know, getting the rug pulled from under them, people who work in hospitality, you know, something that they're so good at and that they've been doing for decades, all of a sudden it's gone. And you're just like, okay, I'm left. I don't know when, you know, my restaurant's going to open. I don't know when this hotel, this spa, this nail salon is going to open. It's just so unpredictable. But I also see that you are donating a lot of your fried chicken sandwiches to doctors and hospital workers. And I commend you on doing that, you know, putting other people first. I think this is what this pandemic has really showed me, is that people care about others. You know, you're worried about your business, but at the same time, you're also giving so much to other people, which is a really beautiful thing to witness. But yeah, and I also, are you working with Lily? She was on my podcast before this one. Are you guys going to work together? Hopefully you guys do, because your chicken sandwiches are so good.
Yeah. Well, first, thank you for, you know, you contributed as well, or the first donor. So, you know, yeah, we initially, my partner donated some funds to the company, and he said, hey, you know what, let's do something good for our community. And I said, okay, great. Like, I'll take care of everything. And, you know, I reached out to Headley and Bennett, and they agreed to supply 100 of their face masks, which they're producing now. They've completely transformed their Vernon factory, you know, into a face factory, a face mask factory. Yeah. And they're an incredible company. Love them, support them. You can buy face masks if you need any. But they donated 100 of them, you know, $1,000 worth of masks. And then our partner, Cloud Kitchens, they supplied 30% of the food cost for the first donation. So we kind of just rallied everyone together and said, hey, you know what, let's do something. And for those people who can help and can afford to help, like, let's do it, you know. And you know, we donated 100 meals to the community hospital of Huntington Park. You know, they're a small hospital, you know, in south of LA, and a lot of these hospitals are overlooked, these small community hospitals. But they were so happy to have those meals. And, you know, so thank you, Olivia, for, you know, putting your part in as well. We really appreciate that.
I really wish I could do more.
No, you did. I mean, what you donated was phenomenal.
I just think what you're doing is really, really awesome, putting other people, you know, first as well, and just sharing your delicious food. I think right now in this time, food is what makes me happy. Yeah. And I think that's what is speaking to so many other people, like everyone. That's why everyone's at home making banana bread. Yeah. You know, literally everyone's cooking up a storm because now they have this time, and it's just food creates this atmosphere of love and like happiness. And in the moments of just eating something, you just feel just lost. I mean, for me, I get lost in food. I don't know. Maybe other people don't feel this way, but like when I'm eating your food, I'm just like, oh, like I'm in a euphoric space. So thank you for creating that space for hundreds of people. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think, 100% food is about community, right? And it's about sharing. Like, here's the thing. I love good food, but I hate cooking good food for myself.
Mm.
And it's the weirdest thing, because everyone loves to ask for chefs, like, oh, do you cook like fancy food for yourself? You cook really nice food, like, must eat really well every day, right? And I'm like, no, I eat 7-Eleven hot dogs and pizzas, and like, you know, like I'll eat McDonald's, and I'll, you know, I'll eat a cup of ramen, you know, and I'll eat a flauta from Costco, you know, mm-hmm. my diet is very simple, you know, but I, when I have the opportunity to cook incredible food, I will. Right. And, you know, I'll post something on my Instagram story today. I made this incredible lamb sandwich. You know, but
a lamb, what did you make?
A lamb sandwich.
Oh,
yeah. So, you know, it's just lamb shoulder boiled in garlic, you know, chili, aromatics, onions. And, you know, it's boiled for about 2 hours, you know, really hard boil. And then it's chilled inside its own broth, then sliced really thin, and then cooked in a pan really low and slow with its own fat. And then we toss in some kale and some shredded broccoli and carrots. And then we season it with Sichuan peppercorn oil and five spice. You know, actually, I use David Chang's like tingly spice mix, whatever that they had. But it, you know, it kind of has that like Sichuan, like Xinjiang style lamb flavor to it. And then a little chili oil. And I made this like Halal Guys replicate sauce at home. And so I, you know, put that onto the bread, ciabatta bread, melted some mozzarella. It was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. You know, I would never cook that for myself, right? But now that my fiance is here with me, you know, it's, there's so much more joy in sharing delicious food with other people, right? So, you know, definitely agree 100%. I think the tough thing now is I think people are craving to have those experiences, right? Going out with friends and connecting and connecting over food and sharing those conversations over the dinner table.
I know. I can't wait. We actually had a sushi night scheduled with you. Yeah. Do you remember? You were supposed to come over and you were supposed to make a sushi. And, you know, obviously that plan got postponed. But I can't wait. We were so close and I can't wait for that night to happen. But in the meantime, the cloud kitchens, the delivery services, that's what's like holding this thing up right now. And as much as another thing I reflected on is that, you know, I took it for granted going to John and Vinny's for breakfast or going to Denny's to get a Grand Slam or going to In-N-Out to get a burger really quick. But, you know, you guys in the food industry have been serving us for a long time. And I think right now is such a good moment to really reflect and appreciate the people like you guys who have been giving so much to us and nourishing us. And now it's just like, I want to find all these outlets to donate and give back to you guys. And I want to give back to the line cooks, the chefs, or the cooks and the servers, like all those people that need our help now. Like, we should do that for them. They were there when I was hungover and I needed pho, you know, I got to be there for them now.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Are there any foundations or organizations that you know that are, you know, helping food industry people?
Yeah, I believe Nancy Silverton had had one. I don't remember the name of it. And then Jose Andres with World Central Kitchen, I think something like that. You know, he's doing something on a global level. So every dollar for their group counts, and he's been, you know, like a chef humanitarian many years, you know, completely
a chef humanitarian. Is that what
you
said?
Yeah, you know, yeah, taking care of people and you know, using food as a means vessel to you know, help society, you know, especially the people who need the help, right? And so he's a fine dining chef. He's the one behind Somni, you know, and the bazaar and a lot of SLS concepts. But he's kind of been doing a lot of humanitarian work through food for many years, and he's tackling coronavirus head on. So his organization's phenomenal.
That's really good to know. Luther, thank you so much for chatting with me. I was so nervous. I was like, I need to make this work because I need to talk to him. He is on the front line as well, nourishing people. So what you do is so incredible. Guys, please go check out Luther Bob's Instagram. And I'm sorry if you don't live in LA. You should sell your sauces or something. Like, your sauces are so good. You should like just have an online store for your sauces. It's like the it's like the Peri Peri sauce, but Luther Bob's.
Oh my God, Peri Peri is so good.
I know.
So underrated.
But let me tell you. I know, but let me tell you, I like Luther Bob's sauce more.
No way.
No, I really do. You don't understand. Like, I put that sauce on anything. When the boys ordered Luther Bob's, I ordered, because I try not to eat meat. What did I think I was like, oh, I was making like a kimchi fried rice or something, and I put your sauce on there, and it's still so good. Hot honey and the Bob sauce.
Yeah.
He has so many different sauces. He's a saucy man. And you guys, if you live in LA, please support and check out his delicious fried chicken business. It is so good. You won't regret it. And the buns are so good. And the jasmine tea. Honestly, I think we're ordering tonight from you guys.
Amazing.
Oh my God. Amazing. I think I'm going to do that. It's so good. And when you gave me that chicken sandwich, guys, I could talk about food all day long, but I'm going to just, this is my last little bit about food. So he gave me this chicken sandwich. I cut it in half. By the way, this traveled about like 30 minutes. The chicken was still crispy. It was so freaking juicy in between the layers, and the bun was so soft. It was so warm. It was perfect. It was the perfect temperature. And by the way, I try so hard not to eat meat. Not that I crave it, but I saw that freaking juicy sandwich just sitting there looking at me. I took a bite, and it was, oof, like I said, you created a euphoric moment for me.
Oh my gosh.
Sell your sauces, man, please. We need them in the house. Need them. Luther, thank you so much.
I'll give all your viewers a special code.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
What is it?
Order Luther Bob's, Postmates, DoorDash, Uber Eats, or Grubhub. Just enter fish cheeks in the notes to the kitchen, and aww, we'll give you a free tendy.
Luther! Stop.
Yeah, no, we got
you. Hi, my fan. Oh.
Yeah,
we wow. Thank you so much, Luther. It was so great talking to you. Good luck with everything. I'm so proud of you.
We'll catch up.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Bye.